For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. Late last week, Governor Fallon signed a bill banning the state from withdrawing money from teachers' paychecks to go to the Oklahoma Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers. Ryan, your thoughts on the governor signing this into law?
Yeah, I think it was expected that she was going to sign it into law. The bills, you know, when they passed out of the legislature, it's pretty clear what the intent here is, and given the governor's, I think, lack of real leadership in areas of controlling what the Republican members of the legislature are generating and putting out into the universe of policy, it wasn't all that unlikely that she was going to veto it, or that it wasn't all that likely that she would veto it or not sign it. So it's not surprising. Again, this is just politics. This is pure politics, pure and simple. You have legislators that are upset that OEA is playing in the political universe during election season, trying to accomplish their policy and political goals, and they took retribution against them by making it more difficult for them to do that. Again, this is their money, not taxpayer dollars, their money. That's a matter of convenience. It's something that the public sector and the private sector has been doing for a long time. This is a very targeted political move.
Neva, there's a possibility they could go after other unions, police, fire. Should they be concerned about this as well?
Maybe a possibility, but I think more importantly, this is really, it's not really retribution. It's simply a bill that gets the state out of the business of collecting union dues. And I think even when you look at what was said by the Oklahoma City AFT president, I mean, it just means that it's going to cost them $12,000 a year was, I think, the figure that he used to collect their dues. And it's a philosophical issue. And it is a political issue to the extent that the Republicans are in control, both in the legislative ranks as well as the governor's office. And so, you know, I agree with Ryan. No surprise that the governor was going to sign this. And I think that we'll see other things like this in the future. And when the pendulum swings and the Democrats have a majority at some point down the road, if that transpires, we'll see things that would be to the counter of this that will be pieces of legislation. So it's the give and take of who's in charge.
I think if it is philosophical, though, and it's this idea that you don't want the government involved, either even the convenience, right, even assuming that the convenience is some sort of a subsidy to the unions. If you don't want the government involved in entities that are playing in the legislative lobbying process and the election process, then I think that we need to be clear that that OEA and AFT aren't the only people doing this. I mean, there are groups like the District Attorney's Council that are state entities that hire lobbyists or have people on payroll that go to the legislature and lobby. And they're not doing it with their own dollars that DAs have contributed. They're doing it with yours and mine, our tax dollars that we're paying into the state coffers. So if it's a philosophical deal, I hope to see this extend beyond just some apparent political targets
of
the legislature.
And I think there's this disingenuous dialogue that goes across the board. I mean, when you have the OEA president saying that this was an attempt to silence teachers, I mean, that's bogus. I mean, first of all, the OEA has become very wise in their, not only their lobbying efforts, but in how they give money to candidates and to incumbents, in that if you look through their list, more and more of those are Republicans, obviously, because of who are in leadership positions and otherwise. So it's not just a one side hard divide where there's no blurring of the lines here. And I think that's where the public wants to kind of tune this out, because they see it for what it is. It's just the give and take of political gamesmanship.
It's disappointing that this has become the dominant education issue, though. During a time where we've got a $600 million,
I don't know that it's a dominant issue. I think it's a bill that's come.
I wish we could get the same kind of consensus on education issues.
I think we'll have a lot more education debate as we see the final budgeting process come to pass in the next few weeks.
It'll be interesting to see. An article in the Sunday Tulsa World warns of unanticipated complications with bills to ban cities and towns from regulating drilling. Insurance officials are raising concerns the bills could invalidate the federal flood insurance program in Oklahoma, resulting in some policies not being renewed, even the possibility of some Oklahoma mortgages get going into default. Neva, should this raise concerns?
Well, I think, first of all, I think these lawmakers are going to be very, very prudent in making sure that they don't have unintended consequences where the flood, for the flood insurance issues that have been raised. But the flip side is they are not going to, I think anytime soon, allow cities and towns to get into the business of deciding they're going to dictate oil and gas policy to the state and to these individual producers that are out there that are now in these squabbles or fights with these local governments on how they're going to regulate drilling issues. So I think you've got several things at play. They're trying to muck it up a little bit. I think to me, at this point, you would have to anticipate that the issues related to the insurance component will be addressed. But I think, you know, you've got the larger issue of the local drilling, and I think that's a bigger fight.
Ryan.
I think that Oklahomans need to be incredibly concerned about this, especially if you are a homeowner or a business owner in one of these floodplains in one of these jurisdictions where you receive this federal insurance subsidy, because the lawmakers, the legislature that is charged with looking at this right now, they don't have a real good track record of avoiding unintended consequences. I mean, we're talking about folks that put together a tax bill last year that was supposed to go into an effect whenever we had a revenue increase, but even now going into the slump, into the downturn, the tax cuts coming into effect because it was poorly written. And you know, we can point to various other examples of where lawmakers have done something in a very shoddy fashion, trying to cater to a particular special interest, and in doing so have brought about a whole host of unintended consequences. So I think that we do need to be concerned about this. I also think that this really demonstrates what happens whenever a special interest and political philosophy collide. For years and for as long as I can remember, the Republican Party has been the party of local control. And yet whenever we see local politicians of both political stripes considering efforts to protect property owners in their local jurisdictions where the elected officials are closest to the people that they represent, that would normally be something I think the Republican Party would get on board with. But here it collides with their obligation to protect their special interest in the oil and gas community. And we see everything from preventing the local control from happening to shielding and sheltering the oil and gas community from potential lawsuits.
I think this is more preemptive policymaking. It's not anti-local control. I mean, to make that argument, I mean, already we have the state involved in a lot of things at the local level. I mean, they take precedent when you look at things like the income taxes, minimum wage, smoking, alcohol, and tobacco. A lot of these things where there is the give and take on the local issues, but the idea that the lawmakers are going to do something that incites the public and homeowners and insurance policy holders to the point that there's going to be the outrage that it's not going to be corrected is to me ludicrous, because obviously they are, if for no other reason than they plan on trying to run and get reelected. So I think it gets messy, and there's a lot of conflict. Again, there's a lot of conflict when they're dealing with these national issues, these state issues, and then you impose the municipalities and their local issues. It takes a long time sometimes to get these things figured out.
The state treasurer released revenue collection numbers earlier this week, and as we expected, oil and gas collections fell, but it was by a pretty big margin, a 48% drop this past year to the lowest level since September of 2002. Ryan, at what point should Oklahomans start to worry?
I think that they should start to worry 2 or 3 years ago. What we're seeing now is the marriage between poor fiscal policy at the state legislature and an economy that's beginning to go into a slump. You know, we see layoffs in the oil and gas industry, and the impact of that on state revenue is yet to fully been realized, and we'll begin to realize that through personal income tax and corporate tax, for months and maybe years into the future, whenever those revenues from individuals that are otherwise paying taxes aren't paying as much or anything that close to what they used to whenever they had these really good jobs in the oil and gas industry. So everything from gross production revenues to personal income tax and corporate tax revenues, these are things that I think that lawmakers just took for granted, or they just ignored. I mean, I think they just blatantly ignored them whenever they are creating irresponsible fiscal policy and tax policy over the last several years.
Neva?
I don't think it was irresponsible tax policy. In fact, when you look at it, even what Treasurer Miller said, it was a significant drop, but it was not unexpected. I mean, they have anticipated, have seen what was coming. And I think when you look at some of the forecasts by those industry officials that really have a pulse on it, I mean, they're saying that they predict that these oil prices will indeed rebound next year sometime. So, you know, you have to look at the total picture. I mean, when you look at these same statistics that came out, personal income tax actually rose 4.44% in the same month. And when you factor in the jobless rate, I mean, we're still at 3.9% versus the national unemployment rate of 5.5%. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom. I think it's tough sledding when you have a budget shortfall, but I think they will come up with a way to deal with this, and we can all argue whether or not it's the best method, but they will, in fact, come up with some resolution before they adjourn in May.
Part of one of the ways that they're looking at addressing it, though, now is to declare an emergency so that they can tap into the rainy day mm-hmm. fund. So it's odd that we have this self-imposed emergency. It's not like the global economic fallout of 2008. It's not like an act of terrorism that's thrown the world into economic chaos. It's something that we have imposed upon ourselves. The emergency here is this tax cut.
Or the emergency is in the eye of, you know, do you want to cut the health care authority, and do you want to cut funds to those folks that, you know, would arguably need it the most, or where do you want the cuts to be? And I think that's where they're at, is that it's not an easy either or. It's we're going to have to slice and dice it all across the board.
But they won't even consider postponing the tax cuts. I think that's totally off the table.
The tax cuts are minimal in the equation.
About $50 million this year, and I think that if you look at that $50 million where it can be invested, that's probably not minimal, and $150 million next year, certainly not minimal.
And I think when you ask individual taxpayers, do they want more money in their pocket, I think they're going to argue, hey, give it to me. I don't want you guys figuring out how you can spend it.
But $29 won't look very good when bridges are falling down now.
A state GOP lawmaker is asking his fellow Republicans to join him in boycotting the conservative state chamber's annual legislative dinner and telling the chamber it needs to fire its CEO, former lawmaker Fred Morgan. Representative Paul Wesselhoff is angry that he and other Republicans faced primary challenges last year, allegedly recruited and funded by the chamber. Neva, is this infighting in the GOP common?
It is, and these are the growing pains of folks that you know, have a hard time. They love getting elected, but they don't like the idea that they have to run for re-election and have real competition.
It's a real bummer.
It's a bummer, and you know, it's amazing how they love the idea. It's good for someone else, but when it comes home to roost in their backyard, all of a sudden it's a whole different ball game. And I think that's what you've got here. I mean, you've got a guy who, you know, as many of these lawmakers, they like to get the headlines. It's an easy way to, you know, take a shot at someone that they're mad at and get a little publicity out of it. And frankly, I mean, here's the same guy who last week on his Facebook posted that he wanted to make sure everyone knew that even though he was more qualified than Barack Obama in 2008 to run for president, that he wanted to announce that he was not going to be running for president in 2016. So, you know, I mean, you have to kind of take this for what it's worth and take it with a grain of salt.
Ryan?
I think Representative Wesselhoff points out that the chamber has an identity crisis right now. I mean, they need to figure out who they are going forward. You know, for the longest time, you know, when Fred Morgan was in the House of Representatives, he largely was the architect behind the creation of the Republican majority that took over in 2004. And then he leaves there and goes to the state chamber and begins to run that much in the same way that he was the architect of the politics that led to the majority in 2004. You know, he's brought that with him to the state chamber. But now, you know, one of the things that the chamber is having to wrestle with is that a lot of these lawmakers that for years they've been electing are going to the legislature and doing stuff like, you know, passing Sharia law bans, proposing a whole host of anti-LGBT legislation, restricting healthcare access, restricting reproductive freedom. And all of these things, even though they may sound really good in Republican primaries, for the bottom line of businesses, and in particular our big businesses in Oklahoma, they don't look that great, and they actually could hurt our economy. And so now the chamber is in this position of having to deal with this Frankenstein that they've created in the legislature. And I think that at some point the chamber has to decide, are they going to be an organization that represents the progressive values that are embodied in Oklahoma's business community, or are they going to continue to cater to the far right in the Republican Party?
And I think, you know, that Wesselhoff said that the chamber basically was supporting big business over small business. I would argue, I mean, chambers of commerce, whatever size chamber in whatever community, it's about supporting supporting business. It's run by folks that are business oriented. It is supported by businesses of all sizes, shapes, and industries. And I think that what we have here really is a situation where, yes, I mean, what these lawmakers have to understand is that any group on any side of the political spectrum has a right and a reason to get involved in elections if they believe those folks have either just openly gone against them in a very antagonistic fashion, or counter to the objectives that they're out there trying to advocate and lobby for. So it's not surprising to me that you get this kind of divide where everyone wants it to be either or, and that's just that just doesn't hold water.
Well, that business community is really out of and they're the visionaries in many ways, and which I think seems kind of odd to a lot of people, but they're the visionaries in a lot of ways on civil rights and civil liberties for their employees in a way that the legislature is maybe 10, 20, 30, or 200 years behind sometimes. And Representative Wesselhoff, if he wants a friend in politics, Lyndon Johnson said to get a dog. Somebody ought to get Representative Wesselhoff a dog.
He's also term limited. Don't forget that.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm his friend. I don't know what that means for him. I'm glad he's not running for re-election. They might use that against him.
Good deal. And Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.